Hey, it's Tony Bruschi, and this is our Week in Review. Over the weekend, taking a look back at some of the most compelling conversations and stories that we've covered for you of the last week. Brand new episodes back Monday morning, bright and early, 5 a.m. here on the podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Stories of shady behavior by the Murtaughs in Hampton County didn't just start with Alec. It goes way, way back. In all this week, we're going to be taking a look at the Murtaughs and their near century of influence of the residents of Hampton County, South Carolina. To take us there, Michael DeWitt Jr., award-winning editor of the 144-year-old Hampton County Guardian, joins us. He's also authoring the book Fall of the House of Murtaugh to be released later this summer. Obviously, we're talking about a very large period of time for all of them running those areas. What was life like with them in power at those periods of time? Were they viewed as fair and good and just, or what was the public opinion, if you will, looking back on it through different eras?
Murtaughs have always had a kind of a complicated legacy and a complicated relationship with the community. If you read or hear any stories of that compare them to a just Dixie Mafia kind of cutthroat family, then you just don't even that's not true.
Okay.
You don't win elections by, the Murtaughs didn't win elections by strong arming anybody. Mm-hmm. They got to where they are by talent, ambition, and Southern charm. Mm-hmm. There's just no, I didn't have the pleasure of knowing Buster Randolph Jr. well, but I knew Randolph the Third, and, by all accounts, the family, they were just very charming, likable people. You could be in the room with Randolph the Third for 5 minutes and hear one of his stories and one of his jokes, and you're like, wow, this is a cool guy. Or you can see him in operation. I had the pleasure of attending and covering several trials that Randolph prosecuted. I sat in on a murder trial. In fact, the last murder trial I covered from start to finish before Alex's trial, his father, Randolph, was the prosecutor. And then I was on the jury in one of his personal injury cases. And just brilliant lawyers, just brilliant. It was like watching, the best episode of Perry Mason or whatever these Southern courtroom dramas are. They just had a charisma. They knew how to work the voters and work the community. And there was some elements of fear, or maybe, but it was a fear mixed with respect. If you crossed them, you didn't have to necessarily worry about, they're going to find your body in a ditch somewhere. But you just knew that the Murtaughs were powerful, and that you really had nothing to gain by crossing them, and who knows what you could lose. So mostly Southern charm mixed with a little healthy mm-hmm. dose of power.
Was there any times where you looked at the way that they would prosecute crimes as being unjust, or in any way having some sort of other motive, maybe, going a little bit of a route where people are going to be very questionable about justice in Hampton County over those many years prior to Alex?
The first Randolph Sr., he was more or less, by all accounts in the newspaper archives, he was more or less a straight arrow.
Okay.
He was in a time of the Great Depression, a lot of banks were going under. A lot of bankers were being prosecuted because they would do things like, they'd take money even though they knew the bank was broke. He was a straight arrow. It didn't matter who you were. If your case came up, he would prosecute you, is the kind of the impression I get from him. The real allegations of corruption come in the second generation, Randolph Murdoch Jr., the guy they call Buster. He's kind of a short, stocky man. He gives you the vibe of a boss hog, just kind of runs his town. And any injustice that might happen probably came before there was even a trial, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they necessarily put away so many innocent people. I think it was maybe, especially with Buster, I think it was if you were connected, you knew him, maybe you had a few dollars to throw his way, you probably never saw the inside of a courtroom.
Okay.
Now, in court, Buster got himself into a lot of predicaments. His son, Randolph III, he was fairly clean cut in the courtroom, but Buster would do things and say things. He would do anything to win a case. And when I talked about this Southern charm, Buster mixed Southern charm with and his just smooth, he could win a jury over. But if that didn't work, he had ways of using fear tactics to win a jury or and win a case. There'd be cases where, you know, some very bad people, they're on trial for murder, rape, whatever. And if Buster didn't think he had the jury in his pocket, you know, he'd say things like, if you don't put this rapist away, I'm going to turn every rapist free from now on. Or in one case in Colleton County where the murder trial happened back in the 50s, he basically said, if you don't convict this guy and send him to death row, you might as well put a sign on I-95 in blood that said murderers are welcome here. He would just say these things that were unethical and violated legal standards. And the higher courts, they often sanctioned him. They often overturned his cases. In many cases, he sent to death row and they were kicked back because of something he did improper in the courtroom.
How did the community react to that? Where, granted, he gets the conviction that he wants through his tactics, but then they're kicked back as being viewed as not valid. Was the community aware that these sort of things were happening, that these things were being overturned and kicked back? Or did they just pay more attention to what was happening at the then and now with current cases?
Buster cared only about the conviction.
Okay.
Once he got that conviction, he didn't give a damn if they were. He never attended an execution. He sent 19 men, or claims to have sent 19 men, to the electric chair, but he never attended an execution. He didn't care if they were put to death. He didn't care if it was kicked back and overturned. All he cared about was the conviction, and he bragged about his conviction rate when he was running for re-election. And I think that's what the people cared about. If you're the average working voting citizen and Buster says, hey, I'm just going to keep putting these bad guys away. I've got a 95% conviction rate and you put me back in office. I'm going to keep sending them to death row. And I think that's what the average citizen cared about. They didn't care about the plight of the accused, mm-hmm. You know, whether they did it or not, whether they... if they were guilty, but their legal rights were violated in the courtroom, they didn't care about any of that. They cared that Buster was claimed to be keeping the streets safe.
And people just ate it up because that's what you want. You want a safe community. However, sometimes when you have someone in there that's not the straightest arrow, you get from point A to point B in a very interesting way. When we're looking back at some of the claims that they make, you just said that he bragged about sending 19 men to death row. We talked a little bit earlier about some of their lineage and claims there. Does the family have a history of lying or pushing the reality, the bounds of real truths?
Well, that's up for debate. I mean, a lot of the family claims, like the Civil War hero and kinship to Jefferson Davis, it may very well be true. Mm-hmm. And there's another claim that, you know, when Randolph first opened his law firm in Hampton, that he never put a sign out front, you know, never hung his shingle out front, because everyone always knew that he was a good lawyer and they knew where to find him. Mm-hmm. So if they didn't start these legends, they certainly didn't discourage him, you know?
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
There is much more to come with Michael DeWitt as we continue to discuss the long era and footprints of control that the Murdaughs had in Hampton County for nearly a century. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any pieces of our conversation. New pieces coming out all this week, Monday through Friday, right here on the podcast. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.